Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Intersection. I'm your host, Frankie Walls, and for this week's episode, we'll be talking to Catriona Ferguson. Catriona is a half-Cuban and half-Scottish woman, and today we talk about her identity as a mixed, white-passing individual.
Thank you so much for being here, Catriona, or I'm just going to refer to her as Cat for this episode. Okay, Cat, do you mind just introducing yourself with your name, your major, and your year?
My name is Catriona Ferguson. I am a Spanish major, education studies minor, and Latino studies minor. I am a junior. And is that it? My pronouns are she, her.
Yep, that's about it. Okay, Kat. So today we're going to talk about your identity as a Latina woman, but also as like a white passing Latina individual. So kind of just like how that experience has like altered a lot of what you've been going through. So if you want to start by talking about like why you chose to go to Ithaca.
Yeah, so I chose to go to Ithaca because I was accepted into the MLK Scholar Program, which is a program based in educating and learning about social justice and social justice work for students from underrepresented communities, or like specifically communities of color. And so I was accepted into the scholarship program, and that was what really sold me on Ithaca. So I committed in 2018, and obviously now I'm a junior, so I've been here for a little while. But the main reason why I decided to come here was that scholarship program, not just for the funding, but also because I am super passionate about social justice and social justice work. So having that opportunity was really important to me.
And would you say that maybe like coming into the MLK program, like it was ever a bit overwhelming, or was it an interesting change of pace to be around so many other students of color versus like where you went to high school?
Yeah, I feel like it wasn't really overwhelming, but it was really nice because where I grew up was a predominantly white place. And as somebody who is half white and half Latina and passes as fully white, I never had an issue when it comes to like just how I appear, but I had a lot of issues like in schools with kids who knew that I was mixed and had issues with that, and had like all these really racist and white supremacist ideals about like who should be in the space. So it was really nice to be around more people of color than what I had previously experienced. But it was also a lot because I was meeting a lot of people at once. And also the scholarship has like high expectations for academics and also what is required of us as scholars. So it was a bit much at first, just trying to get my bearings in a new place with new people and then like a bunch of responsibilities. But it was really nice to have a community to come into the school with.
And would you say that you kind of felt that community when you first came in, or was there ever like any awkwardness because like people like saw you and they're like, how did this white girl get this scholarship or anything like that?
Yeah. So actually the way that the scholarship works is before you're accepted, you have to come to Ithaca and do like an interview, and it's called recruitment weekend. So everyone who's made it to that stage of the recruitment process comes to Ithaca. So you kind of get to meet who you're up against. In a sense, but you also get the opportunity to make friends with people. But it was interesting because I would see kind of like the looks that I would get walking in, which makes sense. For those who don't know me, I have blonde hair and green eyes and pretty fair skin. So coming into a program that's meant for students of color, I could understand why there was confusion or looks of confusion on people's faces. And like questions being asked about like what I was there for, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And after you got into the program and you became an MLK scholar and you got here early and you guys kind of come before everyone else for orientation, I believe, and you like spend a lot more time with your cohort, do you think that like a lot of sense of community was like given to you beforehand, or do you think your bonds got stronger as the year went on?
I think it's a combination of both. The program is really smart in the way that they do the cohorts, because when we come in before, like for an MLK specific orientation, they had a whole bunch of teamwork building and get to know you kind of events. One of them was even kind of like a trust exercise where we went and did a low ropes course in the trees. So it was all kinds of stuff to get us to not only to get to know each other, but to kind of build this bond and trust. So the program really works to foster that as much as they can. So coming into the school year, there was already a bit of a connection there between everyone. And then we are required to live in the same building for the first year so that there is also living together and seeing each other regularly. So in the way that the program is created, it is made to help foster that community, which is really, really nice, especially at the beginning as you come in with people that you've just met.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Would you say that your identity as an MLK scholar and also your identity as a white passing biracial individual played a huge part in like your experiences at Ithaca?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because for the program, they also they would give us jackets and I have a hat and stuff. And when I would wear it around, I would get comments from other people who knew of the program, but maybe weren't in it, and would say, oh, who did you borrow that from? Or whose jacket is that? Or things like that. And I would have to explain that it was mine. And I would get some questions how did you even apply? That's not supposed to be for you and things like that, which I understand because people are just trying to kind of get a grasp on why someone that they don't expect to fit in that space was a part of that program.
But that's also not great.
I'm sorry?
It's just not, I know you're being understanding, but that's also just not cool to assume. No, yeah. I don't like the fact that sometimes people look at you and because you don't fit the mold of what people think is a POC, that you're not a POC. Yeah. Sorry, continue.
No, I understand that. But I also understand where some people are coming from, especially because of my appearance, I'm afforded a lot of privileges that other POC are not, especially because I also grew up in a predominantly white space. So I know how to maneuver those spaces as well. So there's a lot of privileges that I am granted as a result that a lot of other POC aren't. So I also understand why from many people there are those questions about why I'm a part of the program or how I was able to become a part of the program. But I feel the way that people force themselves onto others with their own beliefs is something that can be tricky, in any part of life, whether it has to do with ethnic or racial identity, sexuality, gender, whatever. If somebody takes how they view the world and apply it to you, it's not always going to line up with how you feel as a person. So for example, when it comes to gender, that might have to do with misgendering someone. And it can be damaging in a way and also feel as though there's a lack of value there in one's true identity because others don't seem to latch onto it or find it to be valid. But having the ability to tell yourself that your identity is valid no matter what anyone else says, or taking that time to actually tell yourself that and remind yourself of that is a very empowering thing, especially when it's a constant where you might look one way and people automatically assign you something specific.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that this is something you learned while in Ithaca, or is this something you learned before coming to Ithaca? Is this something you had to learn or something that was kind of already instilled in you?
It was partially instilled in me, but the environment that I was in at home was a predominantly white environment, so the context was different. Now I am at a predominantly white institution, but helping as someone who represents part of a scholarship program for students of color. So not only do I exist in this in-between space by being mixed and being white passing, but I also am one of the people involved in a particular well-known organization on campus for students of color. So it kind of puts me in this weird spot where I'm very obviously sticking out because of that label of an MLK scholar. So I think it caused me to really test whether or not I had truly learned that in high school. And I felt at times that I really was kind of in a spot where I was I feel invalidated again, and I thought I had learned this and I thought I had pushed past this. I don't know why I'm feeling like this, but it was just kind of testing it from a new context, if that makes sense. it was something that I've always known logically, but it doesn't always sit in your head the way that it does in one context versus another.
Yeah, for sure. And then that's definitely like a hard thing to learn, because I know similarly for me, it was this strange experience, because like I'm not mixed. You know this about me. I'm not mixed. I don't have any, I don't really know anything about my identity other than like both my parents are Black. Like I don't know, like in a historical context, like where in Africa or anything like that, or like anything about my ancestors. But something that did happen to me is that a lot of times people would question my Blackness, in a sense, like, not to say that I was ever like invalidated on the same level as you, but it almost felt like I was being scrutinized as if I had these two identities when I only ever had one. Like, it was a lot of times where I was just told that I acted white, or that I didn't act Black enough, or I was too Black in a certain context that didn't actually even exist. And it was just a lot harder to navigate and, I guess, be myself, because it kind of felt like I was like being toggled between these two realms that shouldn't have existed. Like, I feel like sometimes people are so set in like their ways of what a race should represent or what is represented for students of color, that like when people kind of like are out of the norm, like they kind of get scrutinized. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, no, and I totally get what you mean. I feel like obviously my experience is different from yours, because people are taking their expectations of what Blackness is and applying it to you, or what like that level is. So obviously as someone who's mixed, like being disenfranchised in that way is entirely different. But so I don't know exactly how like that would have made you feel, but I know that as somebody who is mixed, and so I do have these two parts of my identity that straddle the boundary of what is and what is not whiteness, which I think is also what makes that so difficult for a lot of people to grasp. And even like as like myself, how that's where some of that difficulty and dissonance comes from for me, because not only are you dealing with two different identities that don't want to claim you, but it's also straddling this idea of whiteness and what that looks like, which is also like a whole other thing. So, because especially like with my experiences, like I've experienced a lot of prejudice from people, whether it was in high school or later, because of being Latina. And that's something that like affected me growing up. I was bullied as a kid, like the whole nine, but obviously it's nothing nearly as bad as what it could have been presenting in a way that doesn't present white, you know? So I try to also be aware of the fact there are a lot of privileges that are granted to me because of it. And I think it's unfair to ignore that. But I think it's also unfair to act as though that kind of bullying and like white supremacy like doesn't apply as well to people who are mixed as well, because I've experienced all kinds of stuff like that throughout like high school and even in college, where people apply stereotypes to what they expect of me as a Latina woman.
For sure. And I can like vividly remember, I don't know if you remember this, but when we had our cultural and linguistic diversity class, or K-8, like that was one of the times where I saw you the most. I saw you 3 times a week at like 8 a.m which like, why did we take a class that early? I'll never know. But
no idea.
But one big thing for me that I do remember is that there was this is when Party of Five was like premiering, like the reboot that Freeform was doing, and it was going to talk about Dreamers and DACA and just like deportation, and how like these 5 kids are like not going to be able to live with their parents anymore because of like immigration, and how like they're being deported because of like ICE and stuff. And I remember sitting with you, and there was this raw emotion that you were feeling, because even if this didn't, like, directly apply to your mom, because your mom has a citizenship now, like, how much, like, hurt and pain, like, and fear you could still feel in that moment for it, and, you know, like, how we all have these moments of fear, and just because someone's, like, privilege is presented in a certain way doesn't mean that, like, on paper that they translate the same.
Yeah, I see what you mean, and I do remember watching that trailer. I remember crying a little bit. It was very well acted, that trailer, and it did bring up a lot of emotion. I feel like there are a lot of things that are damaging to people who identify outside of whiteness, outside of just, like, the normal, like, what gets talked about. It's the constant degradation of people who identify the same way as you in the media. It's the constant stereotypes that are applied to you. It's the tokenization from other groups of people who don't identify the same way as you, who kind of get excited about any time that you portray any sort of cultural practice, and it's kind of like, oh, it does tricks, that kind of, like, look that they get on their face, like, wow, oh my god, say that again, that's so exciting.
Yeah, literally, you, when you, like, speak Spanish and people are like, oh, I didn't know that was, like, you, I didn't know you were fluent, and it's like, shut up, please stop, no, because, like, that's just, like, regular, like, when you speak in Spanish and I just sit there listening, like, mm-hmm, I know some of these words, versus, like, other people who might, like, look at you or out, like, weirdly, or, like, break their neck to, like, hear you speak a different language, like, those things bother me so much, like, in the general scheme of things, like, the idea that someone being othered because they're not, like, this stereotypical, like, whiteness in America, it's, like, very damaging to people, because America has so many, like, different identities and so many people, and, like, the fact that they're not even, like, properly represented in the media, and then we act like, because they're different, we're othering them so they don't even belong in America. Like, all of that just, like, grinds my gears just so much.
No, yeah. I can remember a specific instance in the Ithaca Walmart where I was on the phone with my abuelita because she was in the hospital. And she has dementia and kind of forgot how to speak English. So at this point, it's all Spanish with her. And I was on the phone with her, and this man heard me speak, looked at me, and continued to follow me through the store until I was able to find other, like, the people that I was out shopping with, but he followed me down multiple aisles and was giving me, like, looks, and I know that's something that a lot of other people have experienced as a result of portraying things, like, either physically or speaking a different language that people seem to identify with something that is outside of whiteness. But I also want to acknowledge that there are a lot of times where that fetishization of, like, Spanish and Latina culture it's still damaging when it is that fetishization, but a lot of times it becomes a lot more accepted if someone who looks like me does it. And it's not always accepted.
Yeah, when they think they use the stereotype of, like, the crazy Latina, or, like, oh, I want a crazy Latina, and then it's, like, you, and they're, like, oh, that's great, like, that's enough, it's palatable, right. Almost, and that's, like,
right,
crazy.
It's tough because it's still damaging to have that fetishization or that tokenization occur, but I also, like, want to acknowledge the fact that, like, I am most likely safer than someone with brown or black skin that speaks Spanish in, like, a similar setting, because even though it is damaging to me, that damage doesn't have the same extent as it might for someone who has brown or black skin, because of the way that whiteness still protects me even when I am outed, in a way, I guess outed is a weird word, but it's outed to be outside of whiteness. My whiteness still protects me even when I'm existing in a sphere outside of it. And, like, there's so much power that comes from whiteness that I feel like people don't acknowledge. Like, a lot of times, like, white Latinos don't acknowledge the fact that there is privilege with looking the way that we do. and that there are a lot of things that we don't experience as a result. And I think that that is highly counterproductive, because there's no way for us to actually continue to analyze the way that privilege works if we aren't aware of the intersectionality of it, and we don't genuinely look at the ways that our phenotype affects our experience in the US. And I think that that's something and a conversation that needs to occur, because I see a lot of like Afro-Latinos and like indigenous Latinos or mestizo Latinos coming through and trying to have this conversation, and white Latinos shutting them down because they don't want to be associated with whiteness, which is understandable because whiteness has also caused them pain. But it's not fair to act as though that whiteness has not granted them privilege and granted them safety in so many spaces.
Yeah, 100%. I do see that. And I think that is a conversation that does need to start being had, because in all types of areas, I feel like blackness, or like the darker someone's skin color is, a lot of times, like, the harsher the treatment or reality. And like, we always see like those like skin whitening suggestions, or like all those types of like things that people like, they try to, like, especially in other places, they try to say that that's not racism, that's not a problem there, and that that's an American thing for racism to exist. But like, the idea of skin whitening, or these stories of like princesses who get cursed, and because they're cursed, they're black, and to be cured and white and beautiful again is like the answer. Like, people think these things because they're so ingrained in their minds that these are just like cultural things that are okay to happen, and they don't understand that anti-blackness is just so common in everything that they do. And I think that's a big conversation to have. Also, backtracking just slightly, I feel like we should just never, like, not, no hate, but I just feel like we should never go to Walmart again. Because I feel like that's also, like, I remember, I stopped it before it happened, but, like, I heard it. Like, you know when you have a seventh sense or sixth sense or whatever, and I remember hearing a woman, it was, like, an older white woman, and she was like, oh, I love your hair, and immediately, like, the, like, hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I'm, like, whipping my braids to the side to, like, make eye contact with her, and I'm like, thank you so much, I really do appreciate it, you know, like, trying to be polite, but also, like, inching my way away. And the person I was with didn't understand in that moment how uncomfortable I was, or how dangerous this situation could have been for me if I had acted in a rude way. Because they were asking, like, why were you so polite about that? Or, like, why are you comfortable with that? And it's like, I'm not comfortable with it. But if I am anything but comfortable, like, my life is on the line. And, like, the idea that these instances that happen to us have been so, like, common for someone to just, like, notice a difference about you that they don't have. And they're like, I'm gonna follow you. I'm gonna touch your hair. I'm going to, like, invade your personal space, even though I do not know you. Like, what is, like, why is that, that entire concept just also drives me crazy.
The way that people of color or people who identify outside of whiteness are dehumanized and made to be a spectacle, or made out to be a threat instead of being, you know, left alone to just exist. In the way that we are, whether it has to do with speaking a language or with a hairstyle or just walking around the store and being perceived as a threat or as a criminal, because those are stories that we hear all the time about people of color walking around the store and being followed for the assumption that they're going to steal something, which is something that I don't experience personally, because I walk into the space and I am perceived to be a fully white person. So the only time I've ever been followed around stores is when I speak Spanish on the phone, and I see the stark difference in it. And I see the stark difference in the way that my mom gets treated in stores versus me. She's brown. And even as a kid, I remember once I was probably like 3, and I was crying in the store because I was 3 years old. And a woman approached me and asked me if I was okay. And my mother said, oh, this is my daughter. And she did not listen to her. And she asked me again, do you know this woman? Because her skin tone made her less credible to that woman, and was asking a 3-year-old instead of a fully grown woman about what was happening with me. And that's the story that I just barely remember because I was so young, but I do remember it because it was the first time that anyone ever questioned that I remember, like, who my mom was and how she was related to me and if she, a brown woman, was causing me any harm as a white child.
Yeah. Honestly, like, all of that is just, it's just all so much. And it's so crazy that we have to, like, experience these things from such a young age until now, like, 20 years of life, like, just going through that. Well, now you're at 21, you know, but, like, 21-ish years of life, kind of, like, experiencing those, like, really hard things that you have to adjust to, you know? And I feel like, and it wasn't my first time that someone ever followed me or tried to touch my hair in a Walmart or any store. It's kind of crazy that it happens in Walmarts a lot. But would you say that on the same level, like when you came here and you were being followed in stores when you spoke Spanish or things like that, was it hard for you to adjust to Ithaca, or was, like, this the college itself, but also the area?
No. I live, like I said, in a predominantly white area that is also a very predominantly conservative area with a lot of people who I know are openly quite racist. So I've experienced worse things at home than here, just to put it simply. So being here was not really an adjustment on that front, no.
Okay. And then something I kind of ask when I'm wrapping this up, just to, like, give a great little bow tying to the end of this, but something I ask everyone at the end of these is, what is something that you wish you knew before you came to Ithaca? What is something that you want little cat Triona, little cat, to know before coming to IC?
I would look myself in the face and I'd be like, you don't have to apologize for anybody for existing in the margins of identities that you did not create. Go to the clubs you want to go to, make friends, and just be who you've always been. And don't look for validation from anyone else, because it's not going to help, even if it's, like, for a small amount of time. Just be you.
Okay, so that's it for this week's episode. Thanks again to Catriona for being on the show and being willing to have this conversation with me. You can find more episodes of The Intersection and other podcasts at theithacan.org. Remember to be good people and treat others with kindness and respect. Thanks for listening.